एक सप्ताह तक ऑनलाइन अवेलेबल है.
Radio Buddhist Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You listen to the sound of universal compassion. Today is 2nd of July. We will continue listening to Tendon's previous program with the book Way of Life by Shanti Davies. And please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3 or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello, and thank you for joining the program today, where we are following A Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, a text by the great Indian master called Shantideva. Although it specifically deals with how a bodhisattva should behave, the text's many recommendations are also useful for anyone trying to follow the Buddha's path to enlightenment. Even though one may not want to become a bodhisattva, a person who wants to attain enlightenment to be the greatest benefit to all beings, Shantideva gives us many clues on how to get the most out of our life by developing positive attitudes and behaviors that are not purely centered on self-interest. Last week, we finished the program with a particularly good advice about explaining the Buddha's teachings to others, with a verse, "I should not communicate the Dharma of a lesser being to one who is a vessel for the vast Dharma. I must not forsake the Bodhisattva way of life, nor mislead others by means of sutras or tantras." In other words, we have to teach to the capacity and dispositions of our learners, and not, for instance, give profound philosophical explanations to those who would really like some advice on how to run their day-to-day lives. As Pema Chodron, the famous Buddhist nun and author of books like When Things Fall Apart and The Places That Scare You, says, "Don't bore people with the teachings." This may be a danger when monks from Eastern monastic universities, trained in deep philosophical debates and instructions, bring their experience to the West. I've been in situations where information that would have been quite appropriate on the debating ground of a Tibetan Gelugpa monastery was transported to a Western Buddhist center and mainly left listeners scratching their heads. But similarly, we shouldn't just give basic or ritualistic instruction to students who can profit from philosophical learning. In his commentary on this verse, His Holiness the Dalai Lama says that teachers who only instruct students capable of study and meditation to recite sutras and mantras are misleading the students. He takes as an example many Tibetan monasteries that emphasize rituals and dances, even though the monks are quite capable of intense study and understanding. These students, he says, are being misled. Some Chinese students who have the disposition to study and understand the profundity of the Dharma only do one-pointed meditation and recite mantras. This too is a mistake, His Holiness says. And just as people, through their variety of dispositions, vary in their ability to understand the Buddha's teachings, others vary as to their philosophical and religious beliefs. His Holiness says that just about every belief brings some benefit to beings, and, if for nothing else, should be respected for that. I've heard His Holiness say this many times in his teachings, so obviously it's very important. We're very ready to take arms in the most insulting way today against anybody that doesn't agree with us, but we really have to be most careful about disrespecting other belief systems. But now, before we go on to following the verses in Shantideva's text, verses you might find a little quaint, let's set our motivation for participating in the program today. Thinking that I'm not the only being that experiences suffering and wants to be free of it, let's try to make our motivation the wish to alleviate both our own and others' suffering as much as possible. That requires me to become enlightened, for only an enlightened person has the capacity to really see what others need to be free from all suffering. So our motivation should be bodhicitta, the mind that wishes to become enlightened for the benefit of all beings everywhere. Now let's take a moment to set such a motivation. Thank you. In the next verses, Shantideva references what would have been the customs of his day. He talks, for instance, about a stick for cleaning one's teeth, meaning a stick plucked from trees with microbial properties like the neem tree or even the tea tree and chewed. Of course, we mainly use short toothbrushes today, but I guess the advice remains the same. Don't throw your old used toothbrushes just anywhere, but dispose of them properly. But these verses indicate how we can benefit others by being attentive to the details of our life. This is what Shantideva says. When I spit or throw away the stick for cleaning my teeth, I should cover it up with earth. Also, it is shameful to urinate and so forth in water or on land used by others. When eating, I should not fill my mouth, eat noisily or with my mouth wide open. I should not sit with my legs outstretched, nor rub my hands together. I should not sit alone in vehicles, upon beds, nor in the same room with the women of others. In brief, having observed or inquired about what is proper, I should not do anything that would be disliked by the people of the world. I think that the last line probably gives us the indication of what is good and what is not. It is disrespectful in the East, for instance, to sit with your legs outstretched and pointing at a respected person, like a Dharma teacher. However, a listener in the West has no such tradition, and it's not necessarily being disrespectful as stretching their legs in the direction of a teacher. But whatever is generally disliked by society, we should avoid. For instance, if we use others' land as a toilet, we may well expect to get an unfriendly rebuke. So it's better to avoid such behavior. But even in the West, it is not good manners to fill your mouth to capacity, to make slurping or lip-smacking noises while eating, or to eat with your mouth open. The advice not to sit alone in vehicles, on beds, or in rooms with women not our relatives applies particularly to monks, as either some sexual attraction may occur, thus compromising the monk's vows, or people looking in might get the idea that something untoward is going on. However, in India of his time, much like some Muslim areas today, even if a layman and a woman were seen together in such situations, it could quickly become a scandal. So, Shantideva says, we shouldn't do things that others would find offensive. Rather, we should find out what the customs of a place are and then follow them as well as we can. He goes on, I should not give directions with one finger, but instead indicate the way respectfully with my right arm, with all my fingers fully outstretched. Nor should I wildly wave my arms about, but should make my point with slight gestures and a snap of the fingers. Otherwise I shall lose control. Acting as Shantideva suggests does indicate a greater respect and gentleness towards others than our often more casual behavior in the West. For instance, if asked directions, we automatically point with an index finger. But Shantideva indicates that a more cordial gesture is an open right hand facing upwards. And waving one's arms about while talking may indicate a loose, excitable mind and easily puts others off. I guess one could even knock someone's glasses off. While slight gestures shows someone who is more in control and considerate of others. I don't know about the snapping of the fingers, though. In the West, people might think you're a bit odd if you do that. Then in the next verse, he suggests we lie to sleep in the posture that the Buddha assumed when he dies, the so-called lion posture. That is, lying on the right side with legs outstretched and the right hand under one's head, the left arm resting along the length of the left side of the body. Traditionally, it's said that the Buddha faced north, though the direction we face may be determined more by circumstances. The Tibetan tradition trains students to sleep in the lion posture as a preparation for death time. Certain places of the body are inauspicious for the consciousness to leave from. One of these is the nostrils, so the right hand blocks the right nostril. But whether we decide to sleep in the lion posture or not, the main point is that, as Pema Chodron says, not to mindlessly collapse into bed and equally mindlessly arise. Here's the verse. Just as the Buddha lay down to pass away, so should I lie in the desired direction when going to sleep. And first of all, with alertness, make the firm decision to quickly rise again. So these are some of the ways of conduct Shantideva recommends for an aspiring bodhisattva. The main point, as we've said before, though, is that we do not behave in such a way that causes any difficulties for ourselves or others. Shantideva is implying that we pay close consideration to whatever we do, and don't let impulses or excitable behavior cause discomfort. If we are always in control of our behavior and maintain consideration for others and our environment, we will lay a good foundation for the myriad other activities of a bodhisattva. For, as Shantideva says in his next verse, although I am unable to practice all the limitless varieties of bodhisattva conduct, I should certainly practice as much as been mentioned here, of this conduct that trains the mind. And then he recommends a specific practice to purify negativities and downfalls. He says, 3 times by day and 3 times by night, I should recite the Sutra of the Three Heaps, for by relying upon the Buddhas and the awakening mind, my remaining downfalls will be purified. Now, the Sutra of the Three Heaps is a purification that relies on the 4 opponent powers we have spoken of in previous programs. Remember, the 4 opponent powers are confessing and regretting negative actions, relying on a safe direction, which means in Buddhist terms, reaffirming one's refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and generating bodhicitta, then doing actions opposing the negative actions, and lastly, promising not to do the negative actions again. The Sutra of the Three Heaps uses these 4 powers with a specific visualization and is said to be a powerful force for purification. Pema Chodron makes a good point in relation to this verse and those following, though. She says, the bodhisattva's acts aren't limited to rigid moral guidelines. We do whatever inspires people to help themselves and whatever it takes to remove suffering. Because this is so open-ended, it's helpful to have books as guides. Here and in the following verses, Shantideva gives some suggestions. In some monasteries, nuns and monks recite the sutra 3 times a day. In this way, they acknowledge where they are stuck and where they've caused harm. Then they can start out anew. Whatever I'm doing in any situation, whether for myself or for the benefit of others, I should strive to put into practice whatever has been taught for that situation. There is no such thing as something that is not learned by a conqueror's son. Thus, if I am skilled in living in this way, nothing will be non-meritorious. This means putting what we have learned of the Dharma into action. It's not much benefit if we read and even memorize the Buddha's teachings, but then don't act on them in our everyday lives. So Shantideva is saying that everything we do must be in accordance with the teachings we have learned. And bodhisattvas will scorn or pass by nothing to achieve their purposes, because, as Pema Chodron says, they don't set themselves apart. They join in with humanity. She talks about how her teacher was a voracious learner for the sake of Dharma. He was interested in using everything on the path to enlightenment, she writes. Calligraphy, filmmaking, poetry, flower arranging, tea ceremony, archery, horseback riding, theater, photography, and dance. Although he grew up as a titled person in a monastery, he knew how to make a drum and do gilding, tanka painting, and sculpture. And he wasn't afraid to take on the most difficult out-of-control situations. In fact, he loved them. Well, maybe we can't be quite as versatile and enthusiastic and capable as Trungpa Rinpoche, but we can slowly learn to make everything we do part of our practice to gain enlightenment. If you want to learn a musical instrument, you could do it just to entertain yourself and others with melancholy love songs or raucous ballads. But you could also learn the instrument to compose songs that make a Dharma point, that help people overcome their sufferings. And if you become famous, instead of taking refuge in sex, drugs, and rock and roll, you could influence large numbers of people to be more compassionate and aware. Take Richard Gere, for instance. I have heard that he once asked His Holiness the Dalai Lama whether he should become a monk, but His Holiness told him he would be far more beneficial as a famous name. And you can hardly argue with the fact that Richard Gere has become the most visible Buddhist face in Hollywood, Keanu Reeves notwithstanding. He's an avid campaigner for human rights, not only in Tibet, but all over the world, and serves with many NGOs to alleviate the suffering on our planet. He's such a thorn in the side of the communists that he's permanently banned from China. He would probably have been unable to accomplish all he has as a monk. And now Shantideva points to the two things that bodhisattvas place their reliance in, the mind of bodhicitta and the spiritual teacher. He says, "Whether directly or indirectly, I should not do anything that is not for the benefit of others, and solely for the sake of sentient beings, I should dedicate everything towards awakening. Never, even at the cost of my life, should I forsake a spiritual friend who is wise in the meaning of the great vehicle and who is a great bodhisattva practitioner." He says that whatever a bodhisattva attempts, both directly and indirectly, the motivation should be enlightenment to help sentient beings. According to Pema Chodron, indirectly means working on our own minds, while directly means lending a helping hand wherever we can. And whatever positive potential we accumulate through our actions, we dedicate to gaining enlightenment for the sake of all beings, the mind of bodhicitta. Then in the next verse, Shantideva talks about the importance of the spiritual teacher, the one with whom we have a particular connection. The great vehicle, or Mahayana, is the vehicle of the bodhisattva. Its main focus is bodhicitta and the wisdom of emptiness, or the direct realization of the nature of reality, that which Pema Chodron calls the ultimate unfixated nature of everything. In his commentary to these verses, His Holiness says that to understand the Dharma, one should seek out a teacher who is learned in both the Buddha's teachings and the commentaries. But not only that, the teacher must also be a strong practitioner of the bodhisattva training. Both aspects, learning and practice, are very important in a teacher, His Holiness says. Even in a mundane school, the quality of a student's learning depends on the quality of the teacher's guidance. For instance, medicine or engineering students cannot succeed without a properly qualified teacher. And in the Dharma, it is the same. Unless we find a well-qualified teacher, our Dharma practice will not progress powerfully. But, His Holiness says, if we meet with a badly qualified teacher, we could either develop wrong understanding or later come to disrespect the teacher. So we have to know the characteristics of a proper teacher and then examine those we take teachings from to see if they have the characteristics before taking anyone as a personal guide. His Holiness warns that when we recognize the characteristics in a person, we can take him or her as our personal teacher, but otherwise it is better just to regard them as a Dharma friend. On the Mahayana path, Pema Chodron concurs that the role of the teacher is very important. We need the example of someone who is fully enlightened, or at least further along the path than we are. This is someone who does not get caught in fixed mind, she writes. Someone who lives with a sense of equanimity and kindness, even under duress. And then she relates some of her own experience. Just being around our spiritual friend can teach us more than any book. I was rarely alone with Trungpa Rinpoche, but I remember those times vividly, as well as the times I spent with great teachers, such as like the 16th Karmapa and Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche. I learned from everything they did, the way they spoke, ate their food, and related with people. Thus, Shantideva says, never at the cost of your life or limb forsake your virtuous friend, your teacher. That is what Pema Chodron writes, and then Shantideva himself gives instruction how to depend on your spiritual friend with the mention of a particular text. I should practice entrusting myself to my spiritual master in the manner taught in the biography of Sri Sambhava. This and other advice spoken by the Buddha I can understand through reading the sutras. The biography of Sri Sambhava is actually a chapter of the Gandavarya Sutra, which is itself the last chapter of the Avatamsaka Sutra, translated by Thomas Cleary as the flower ornament scripture. The section that Shantideva refers to goes like this. If you would pay due homage to the spiritual master, let your mind be like the earth, never tiring of the burden of supporting everything, like a diamond, indestructible in its intent, like a rampart, wherein suffering can find no breach, like a slave, never jibbing at all that must be done, like a faithful beast of burden, never restive, like a ferry boat, always willing to go back and forth, like a perfect son who drinks in with his eyes the countenance of his spiritual father. O noble child, look upon yourself as a sick man, your spiritual master as a physician, his teachings as a healing draught, and your sincere practice as the path to health. I should read the sutras because it is from them that the practices appear, writes Shantideva. To begin with, I should look at the Sutra of Akashagarbha. In addition, I should definitely read the compendium of all practices again and again, because what is to be constantly practiced is very well and extensively shown there. Also, I should sometimes look at the condensed compendium of all sutras, and I should make an effort to study the works by the same two titles composed by the exalted Nagarjuna. I should do whatever is not forbidden in those works, and when I see a practice there, I should impeccably put it into action in order to guard the minds of worldly people. Now, I can't say for sure, but I don't think that the Sutra of Akashagarbha is translated into English, though evidently there are Chinese translations for those who can read Chinese and are interested in pursuing this. His Holiness says that it's important for someone who has newly taken the Bodhisattva vows because it explains the root infractions and how to remedy them. The Compendium of All Practices is Shantideva's own earlier work, more commonly known as Shikha Samuchaya. It has been translated into English by Cecil Bendall and W.H.D. Rouse, and I know you can get it from Amazon if you want it. The Condensed Compendium of All Sutras is also another work by Shantideva himself, though I haven't seen a translation into English. It may be part of the Compendium of All Practices, but I can't say for sure. However, we don't have to only be limited by these recommendations. Many texts and books on Buddhism have been written in English now that we can refer to, and as Pema Chodron says, when times are tough, reading a Dharma book or listening to a tape can help us to stay sane. She also points out that whatever is not prohibited in the text we are following, the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, we can surely practice. And now Shantideva completes the chapter we're following with the last two verses. He writes, the defining characteristic of guarding alertness in brief is only this, to examine again and again the condition of my body and mind. Therefore I shall put this way of life into actual practice. For what can be achieved by merely talking about it? Will a sick man be benefited merely by reading the medical texts? Again, he comes back to the traditional analogy of the student being like a sick person and the Dharma being the medicine. If, like a patient who doesn't take the prescribed medicine, we don't put the Dharma teachings into practice, we will go nowhere. Fundamental to all Buddhist practice is mindfulness and alertness, bringing our attention back again and again to our present experience and what the mind is doing. For the mind is such a fickle, skittish thing that it is easily led off into places it has no right to be and doing things it should not be doing. Now, as we end this chapter in this program, I would like to read once again how the great Vietnamese master Thich Nhat Hanh recommends in 5 steps we deal with the disturbing emotions mindfully. I know that I read this a few programs ago, but I'm convinced that if we can master this technique, our lives will be so much more calm and manageable. It goes like this. The first step in dealing with feelings is to recognize each feeling as it arises. The agent that does this is mindfulness. In the case of fear, for example, you bring out your mindfulness. Look at your fear and recognize your fear. You know fear springs from yourself and that mindfulness also springs from yourself. They're both in you, not fighting, but one taking care of the other. The second step is to become one with the feeling. It is best not to say, go away, fear, I don't like you, you're not me. It's much more effective to say, hello, fear, How are you today? Then you can invite the two aspects, mindfulness and fear, to shake hands as friends and become one. Doing this may seem frightening, but because you know that you are more than just your fear, you need not be afraid. As long as mindfulness is there, it can chaperone your fear. The fundamental practice is to nourish your mindfulness with conscious breathing, to keep it there alive and strong. Although your mindfulness may not be very powerful in the beginning, if you nourish it, it will become stronger. As long as mindfulness is present, you will not drown in your fear. In fact, you begin transforming it the very moment you give birth to awareness in yourself. The third step is to calm the feeling. As mindfulness is taking good care of your fear, you begin to calm it down. Breathing in, I calm the activities of my body and mind. You calm your feeling just by being with it, like a mother tenderly holding a crying baby. Feeling his mother's tenderness, the baby will calm down and stop crying. The mother is your mindfulness, born from the depth of your consciousness, and it will tend the feeling of pain. So don't avoid your feeling. Don't say, you're not important, you're only a feeling. Come and be one with it. You can say, breathing out, I calm my fear. The fourth step is to release the feeling, to let it go. Because of your calm, you feel at ease, even in the midst of fear, and you know that your fear will not grow into something that will overwhelm you. When you know that you are capable of taking care of your fear, it is already reduced to the minimum, becoming softer and not so unpleasant. And now you can smile at it and let it go. The fifth step is to look deeply. You look deeply into your feeling of fear, to what is wrong, even after the baby has stopped crying, after the fear is gone. By looking, you will see that what will help you begin to transform the feeling. You will realize, for instance, that his suffering has many causes inside and outside of his body. If something is wrong around him, if you put that in order, bringing tenderness and care to the situation, he will feel better. Looking into your baby, you see the elements that are causing him to cry, and when you see them, you will know what to do and what not to do to transform the feeling and be free. A breathing meditation, also by Thich Nhat Hanh, can help in this five-step process. On the first in-breath, you say to yourself, breathing in, I calm my body and mind, as you let the breath wash through you. On the out-breath, say, breathing out, I smile, and gently smile to yourself. On the next in-breath, say, living in the present moment, and on the out-breath, I know this is a wonderful moment. And you appreciate as much as possible your experience right in that moment. In short, the meditation goes calming, smiling, present moment, wonderful moment. And that is all for today. Thank you for joining the program, and I hope you have a wonderful week. Please dedicate any positive potential we've accumulated today to enlightenment for the sake of all beings. Thank you, and goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering.